And good afternoon, everyone. You are listening to CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm your host, Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and I am doing another solo round here in studio this week as Scotty is on assignment in a faraway land at the bottom of the hill somewhere. Busy man these days, that's Scotty Hertz. So I will be here doing the show myself. I will, however, not be alone. And we'll get into that in a second. Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can find us here every Thursday at 5 p.m. to talk the latest in news items from Guelph, Ontario, Canada, and around the world. And we even sometimes interview local newsmakers and politicians, which this week will be at the bottom of the hour, Guelph Police Chief Gordon Kobe. And I recorded that interview earlier this week at Guelph Police Headquarters. So stay tuned for that. For right now, here in studio, I am pleased to be joined by Ward 2 Councillor Rodrigo Galler. Second time here in studio. Not that we're keeping score, of course, but welcome back, Rodrigo.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
Let's start with... You've had a bit of a time lately. We talked to Dan last week, who was on the other end of the motion you brought forward on getting some harm reduction housing built at 106 Beaumont. But you were the originator of that motion. It died an inauspicious death this Monday at City Council.
That was painful, yes.
That was painful, yeah. How are you feeling about that now? I mean, it seemed like a bit of a lark, but talk about, what your ideas behind bringing that motion forward.
Yeah, so I was actually speaking with Bob Bell from Ward 1, and he let me know that the Guelph Wellington Drug Strategy was coming forward, that they were looking at supportive housing to some sort of model to help people transition from, that we have that gap between homelessness and affordable housing, and it's quite a big gap, and we need to find ways to fill it. So that community group actually came to us in June. So it goes back to that time. And they said, we have this project. We want to build some harm reduction housing here in the city. And we're looking at possibly using shipping containers. So it's a twist on that tiny home revolution.
Yeah.
And then later in the fall, we had a report come to City Council on stranded assets. It presented maybe 8 or 10 city properties, most of them on the edge of the city or that are not being used or are underused. They pointed at one of them, located at 106 Beaumont, that was, on a bus route. It's a half-hour walk to downtown. And Bob said, how about this site? Could we potentially use it as a place for harm reduction housing here in the city? And I thought, well, that would be something. Because,
sure,
I mean, it's really tough that we have this big problem of homelessness growing in Guelph, and it is the responsibility of Wellington County. They are our providers for social housing, but they're not building social housing, and we can talk more about that. I thought having this unused or underused piece of land, maybe we can use it for a project that would bring modular homes that could be placed, that they could be removed at a later date, and it would help us address this this growing problem of homelessness here in the city on at least a temporary basis.
Right.
That original motion was brought at the time that the stranded asset report came forward. We had a few conversations about it around the horseshoe, and we decided that it would be better to wait until November 4th when a report from city staff on the harm reduction housing work that had been done came forward. So we set it down, and then we let everyone know on November 4th we're going to be bringing this motion forward to use this unused piece of city-owned land for harm reduction housing. And it was to explore, what would it take to use this piece of land? Is it even possible? What kind of zoning would we need? Because we I mean, it is completely new to Guelph and to other places in the province. We do not have a presence of shipping containers being used as modular homes.
Yeah.
So it would be a testing ground to see what it would take. And from our part, the idea was that we would just be the owners of the land, and we would lease it to a proponent, and then they would take charge of managing this. And then that would be, you know, potentially a coalition of the different organizations that provide shelter support here in the city.
Yeah.
However, the way that the conversation went on November 4th, 12 councillors voted in support of exploring.
Yeah.
And one councillor voted against it.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the way that it was picked up by the media and the way that it was portrayed was that council had made a decision to place housing for addicts in that neighborhood.
Right. It seemed like it was, and I expand on this in mm-hmm. my column for Guelph Today this week. This was a process story, and yes. we didn't get the story right. That, and I mean, I don't know if I take any blame. I'll take a blame on behalf of the media. But you know, there was a format here. There was a process that stuff comes forward in committee, and then it gets ratified at the end of the month. And yeah. a lot of people, perhaps understandably, living in the area, didn't get that part of the message that this wasn't a done deal.
Yeah. And you know what? Even if people understood that it wasn't a done deal, I think it is scary to think that something strange and unknown is going to be coming to your neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
especially when there is a big misconception about who are the people that are living in tents by the side of the river. And there's this malignment of people who are in the most desperate situations in our community, living rough outside.
Yeah.
So I think we need to do work to address that perception, because no matter where we look to create harm reduction housing in the city, I expect that we're going to have a similar response from the immediate community.
And that's the thing I was thinking a lot about was, because of the stigma, mm-hmm. yeah, that, you know, and but one of the things I will say that I found persuasive in at least one of the persons who delegated, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he's the one who pointed out that his area in Beaumont, that 106 mm-hmm. Beaumont, although it is city owned land, not necessarily earmarked for parkland or open space or something like that, that is essentially the only open park space in their neighborhood for the kids to enjoy, for the kids to just run around in and have fun in the outdoors. It's an underserviced area for amenities, and I think that angle of that concern was probably very legitimate.
Absolutely. That is indeed one of the more underserved areas of the community. And at the time when we had this report, I should have, but I didn't take the moment to consider who the neighbors were. We just thought we have one piece of land that staff is telling us could potentially be suitable for this.
Yeah.
So let's see if it could. But then we got entangled in the process. So now, after long debates, and there were good arguments on both sides. So the community mm-hmm. members who came, who advocated, I think you might have been speaking about Brian McPherson.
That's it. Yep.
He's a really good community advocate. He presented a really well-balanced argument. There were two young individuals who delegated on the other side, speaking about the plight of people who are sleeping rough in our city, Lily and Kennery.
Yeah.
And they spoke about their experience and really presented the fact that someone that is living rough is not going to be more likely to victimize other people. On the contrary, they're more likely to themselves be victimized.
Yeah.
And I think that is something that we need to recognize. And we need to have a little more compassion in our community. Now, of course, that's easy to say, but
yeah.
you know, if it was in my backyard, I understand that it would be different.
Yeah.
So we need to address the stigma. Now, thankfully, there are a lot of organizations in our community. I mean, we have Habitat for Humanity, the Drop-In Center, Hope House, the Guelph Community Health Center, and all of those organizations, they actually got together back in September for an affordable housing symposium. They had a couple of days of conversations, and they had a follow-up that was last week or the week before. And on the follow-up, they started identifying, you know, we need a leadership team. Mm-hmm. So we know we have this gap in our community, but and it goes back to the same issue that we were having is who is the proponent? Who is the person that's actually going to sign the dotted line and say, I take responsibility for this building. I'm going to be the one that looks for the grants. And I mean, as a municipality, the city of Guelph is not in a position to do that.
Right.
We don't have the expertise, the skills to manage that sort of operation. Wellington County may, but then this is where it gets interesting. The mandatory, we give the county, I think, something in the realm of $22.5 million for housing, for disability supports, for childcare.
Yeah.
So we give that money to them. And then we saw in the, when they presented their budget, each year Wellington County puts $500,000 towards affordable housing, towards mm-hmm. building new affordable housing. So we are paying to maintain the existing housing stock
right.
here in Guelph, but we are not contributing anything towards a fund. Well, I shouldn't say anything.
Yeah.
We put away, I think, $300,000 last year, and we have in the budget $330,000 again this year. But that is a very small amount compared to the number of people who are either underhoused or outright homeless here in Guelph. So I think we need to step that up.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets challenging because people say, well, it is a provincial responsibility
right.
to deal with housing, but the province is not coming forward to build housing here. So unless we put the money down, we're going to keep on having to pay more for police and the hospital and emergency services. So it's one of those challenges that, you know, strictly speaking, mental health issues, poverty issues, housing issues, that is not within the direct responsibility of the city of Guelph, but all of the fallout from that, then we have to pay for it.
Right.
So I think this is one of the cases where if we spend some money and put some more resources towards supportive housing, harm reduction housing here in the city, we'll be saving a lot on emergency resources. I mean, I've heard that, you know, one individual that is in and out of hospitals and police and dealing with paramedics could cost the city upwards of $1 million. And that's just
for that one person.
For that one person. And that is a staggering amount. I mean, if we spent a fraction of that to house, you know, a good number of people, then we would see a lot of savings on the back end.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping that in this budget we can support the initiatives that came out of the mayor's task force looking at homelessness. And they are a court support worker that you know, works with people who are in the court system because of addictions and helps them get out of that cycle of you know, offending, being released, maybe spending some time in the judicial system, in the penal system, but then coming out and having no supports.
Yeah.
So we want to support that. There's also the support recovery rooms, somewhere that gives people a couple of days in a stable place so they can think about their life and actually maybe seek some support if they're ready to make a change. And I think that there's also the Welcoming Streets Initiative.
Mm-hmm.
That is a person that walks around downtown talking to people that are having a hard time. And it really helps the business owners because then they're not the ones that have to deal with someone coming into their business and maybe, you know, being high or just having a rough time.
Right.
So all of these initiatives, I'm hoping that we can continue to support them. And on top of that, we did have the request for $600,000 from the Adrian Carter from the Wellington Guelph Direct Strategy towards some sort of harm reduction housing. Sure, we don't have a place, but I think if we set aside the money, then there is a chance that we can have something placed somewhere in the city
mm-hmm.
Before next winter.
Yeah. You've probably teed up all that nicely to talk about the budget because that's coming down on Tuesday. That's decision day. And I'm wondering from your perspective, talking to your fellow councillors, do you think it's going to be a contentious evening? There's going to be a crunch between the wish list that you just had for social services, and there's going to be the magic 3% number that we're already 0.78% over that a lot of your colleagues are going to be looking at.
Yeah. And you're right, it is a wish list. these are things that I see that we can spend now to save money on the back end. Just like the police budget, they came in with a big ask, almost a 10% increase to their budget. But then they also let us know that over the last decade, their numbers haven't kept up with population growth. And I'm sure that Chief Kobe will get more into it. But from my perspective, I get calls from my constituents who tell me that they're not getting the level of service they expect from our police service. That, you know, if someone is trying to break into their house and being a threat to them, they've called the police and it's taken the police up to an hour to check in on them. Or, you know, when there is break and entries, they call in and this person is shaken up because someone's been in their house or in their garage. And then the police tell them, you know, fill the online form because we're really tight for resources. We don't have an officer to talk to you.
Right.
And then that puts people off and they say, well, you know, the police are not going to do anything. They don't have the resources or the time or they don't care about me. So I think we need to correct that. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that means a big tax funding of the police budget. I think that it is warranted based on what I hear from my constituents and what they're asking me for. And you were there for the War 2 town hall that James and I hosted last week. And when we asked the question, you know, how does everyone here feel about funding the police and then funding other programs that help those most in need? And I think everyone in the room put their hand up saying, yeah, it's going to be a tough year, but we're willing to do that because we require those services.
It's interesting that, I mean, there are always going to be people who are like Mr. Fung, who was at the meeting last night. He makes an annual pilgrimage to the delegation night to talk about mostly cutting the communications department. That seems to be his bugaboo. But I've been to a lot of the town halls, and there really hasn't been that voice at them. And, you know, it could be the crowd. It could be like the municipally engaged crowd who realize or have a deeper understanding of the need. But even just one-on-one, are people of the opinion that they're going to have to pay a bit more this year and maybe that's okay?
So I've spoken to a few dozen constituents about this, the challenges that we're facing as a community. We have not only increases this year for the police, also our hospital is telling us that they're falling behind and they need to expand their emergency services, their maternity ward. They need to get some more technology. So that's another big ask of $4.5 million from the municipality.
Over 5 years, they're asking.
Over 5 years. Yeah. So it's still coming from the taxpayer. And then we have our operations hub. I mean, staff tell us that the buildings that they're using that were built in the 50s and 60s are crumbling. Mm. And then we're spending millions of dollars to replace are essentially obsolete buildings that are too old and too small for what we need. So between this year and the next year and the next year, so in the next couple of years, we're looking at significant expenses. And the challenge is that unless we make those expenses, we're going to pay more. I mean, where we're spending this year, I think it's $1.7 million to restore municipal facilities that are falling down. So we have, you know, garage bays that need to be replaced on workshops. And I mean, when I see these costs, they're very, very high. But I mean, that is what it costs to repair large facilities that deal, you know, that house or snowplows and garbage trucks. I was looking at it, and if we keep on making those payments year after year to keep on fixing these older buildings, we are, as staff suggesting, better off building new facilities. Now, we will need to phase all of that in because we're looking at a very big numbers. But I think that unless we make those expenses now, for example, with the police, unless we pay for it now, they told us that it would take them up to a year to get up to full complement because of the time of recruitment and whatnot. So unless we do that now, we're not going to see the service levels be what the community is expecting before 2022. So I think it's already going to be long enough that we have to wait upwards of a full year to see the impact of the increased funding. I'm really concerned that if council decides to push that off, we are going to have more expenses in overtime pay, in medical expenses for people that are on sick leave at police. And if we push off some of those other infrastructure repair costs, doing emergency repairs is so much more expensive. Every time that a building breaks down or a water main breaks down and we have to send emergency crews, we are paying many more times than we would if we had fixed and maintained things on a proper, on a timely basis.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that this is maybe one of those budgets where, you know, the council's going to have just eat everything, or is there wiggle room? Like, is the axe going to fall somewhere? And if the axe is going to fall, where do you think it's going to fall?
I think this budget we might have to eat everything, knowing the unfortunate impact. However, next year we have a couple of huge projects coming online. We're going to have to start paying for the South End Rec Center and for the library build. And, you know, between both of those, we're looking at $130 million, somewhere around there. So that's going to be a big year. Of course, a lot of that is going to be put on debt, but that also concerns me, because the more municipal spending that we put on the ventures, then we're going to be paying, I think they told us, upwards of $600,000 per year to maintain that debt. And that's just... you know, it's like me maxing out my credit card, and then I start buying things on the Sears card, and, you know, and then I...
Well, not anymore.
Yeah, but it's that ridiculous balance. So I think that next year we might have to see how we can stage the projects of the operations hub, and what we can do to... Hopefully we get good funding for the library and for the rec center. But at this point, we're sort of sitting on our hands and waiting for the promise to tell us how much we can charge for those projects.
Right. I mean, that's the added thing that doesn't... I mean, there's this budget crunch every year of, like, what do we fund, what don't we fund, how much are we willing to spend? But, I mean, there's the added difficulty in that. To my knowledge, the amounts that you can be collected under the community benefit charges, which are replacing the soft ECs, that's still a question mark.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is very scary for us. I mean, before, you know, the last year, we would have known that we had so many builds expected. We could collect so much in development charges. But when they said you can no longer get money for libraries or parks or all of these things from development charges, that is going to be a separate fund. But we don't know how much that fund is going to be, or, you know, whether we can recoup any of those costs. That is really going to impact the viability of the South End Rec Center and potentially the new main library branch.
Mm. Maybe before we run out of time, you've been in city council for over a year now, or almost a full year. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you're more knowledgeable now about the city matters? Do you feel that you've learned a lot? Has the year changed you?
Absolutely. I have learned a lot. I've learned about... I'm still learning about the importance of due process and how the slow wheels of the municipal government move and how to make effect. I'm also learning how to answer the questions that I want to answer when I get asked questions. So that is important. And I think there's still a long way to go. But what I really enjoy most about the job is talking to my constituents and helping them figure out issues, get answers to the questions that they have. So I am really enjoying the work. Weeks like this, when we have to deal with budgets,
right,
and when we have to deal with those tough issues, like what do we do to support the problem of people not having anywhere to live in Guelph? These are challenging weeks, especially when the balance of council that, you know, before voted to approve an exploration, you know, can we do this in this site? Then it flips around, and some of my council colleagues that I thought, oh no, these folks are really, they really care about the community, they really care about those who are most vulnerable in the community, they do a switch. And then, you know, the resolution that was passed instead of the exploration of this particular site, it was essentially a do nothing motion that was brought forward. That really flabbergasted me. You know, there was so much build up from during that night about the motion that was going to be brought forward, but it was like, let's sit and wait. So I'm hoping that at least if we can put some money aside to support these projects, then we can have something tangible to give the community organizations when they come back with a proponent saying, okay, now we're ready to get this project going.
There are a lot of young people who are fairly passionate about that, you know, so what's your message to them going forward in terms of, you know, what council can do and maybe what you can do as the originator of that endeavor?
Yeah, no, I do want to connect with the individuals that came to speak because they have more experience than I do with these issues. And I think speaking up is incredibly important. Council can only do what we do with the information that we have. And when we don't have information, when we don't understand what the circumstances are of some of our community members, then I think that's part of why the city of Guelph hasn't been putting money away for supporting people that are living rough, because yeah. We just didn't know. So I think the more vocal and the more visible that people can be in a respectful way and in a way to build dialogue, it is very, very helpful. So I would encourage other people to come speak to your counselors, come delegate at council meetings, and just overall help share the message and really help demystify this idea of ours versus them and help build some more warmth and tolerance towards the most vulnerable members of our community.
All right, well, that's a good place to leave it on. So, Rodrigo Galler, thank you so much for joining me today.
My pleasure. Thanks, Adam.
And we're just going to take a quick break and queue up our interview with Chief Kobe. You're listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And that was a little Boat Rockers from the Soul Jazz Orchestra. I like that ditty. I believe it is still on the CFRU chart. But I digress. I'm going to get right into it. This interview with Guelph Police Chief Gordon Kobe. We talk about the police budget, as we were sort of alluding to in the conversation with Councillor Galler there. Hopefully this will give a bit more context about what the police concerns are, why the budget is going up by 9.8% this year. Just a quick word of advisement as you're listening to this. There is a low-pitched whir because we recorded this in the chief's office, which is right next to another room where they were testing a generator that morning. It does go away before the end of the interview, almost right before the very end of the interview, but I digress. Let's hear from Guelph Police Chief Kobe. Chief Kobe, thank you for talking to me today.
Thanks for having me.
I wanted to start with something you said at the budget meeting. Council was hitting you pretty hard, as I'm sure you expected. Mm-hmm. But you said it's the 9.8% increase isn't because anybody's done anything wrong. And this is kind of where your job gets into the politics and less into the policing, which I'm sure is your favorite part. But at the end of the day, it's 9.8%, which makes me think something went wrong. It's not necessarily a who, it's not necessarily on one person, but some point along the way, decisions were made that got us to 9.8%. And I'm wondering if there's any clarity you can bring to that. Like, not necessarily who went wrong, but I mean, where did the process go wrong?
Well, I think it's almost, from a forward-looking perspective, not looking behind, I think that over the last several years, our community has had, we've grown faster than almost any other communities our size in the province. Mm-hmm. So we've had, in the last 5 years, according to Stats Canada, we've grown at over 8.5%. Right. So the community's growing really fast. Our work has changed a lot over the years. Like, we're doing a lot of things. If you think of how, digital evidence and all that stuff, how we do our work has evolved a lot. So there's a resourcing piece there. In addition, societal issues, things like mental health and the opiate addiction crisis. These are all kind of a series of things that have really impacted our community and our ability to have resources and the workload. In addition, I think the service and the board has always been very, very responsible and careful, and they've always tried to kind of not... they've tried to maintain a growth rate from a financial cost that was within kind of parameters. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like we have this perfect storm of events that have left us with record crime rates, record crime severity, and all those other things you saw at council, that it's, we just, this is the correction we need to kind of, to get on a reasonable footing to then grow at a pace that you'd be more used to seeing.
I think perfect storm is probably the subtitle of this year's budget, but that gets into areas beyond policing too.
But it really is important to say, whether it be previous people or boards or councils, I think everyone has always done their best. The service has done their best. And the whole the conversation we had at council a couple days ago, that's part of the transparency that the community should be, those questions are the questions that they should be asking us.
Right. And I wonder, and you address this, that, you know, we're talking about the rate of growth in Guelph, and I'm wondering about the you know, a certain amount of sticker shock from people in the community, about 9.8%. But to that, I wonder if there's a bit of friction here too. A lot of people in Guelph still think of Guelph as a small place, as a small town. And it's, you know, we're nearing the 150,000 mark. Is, you know, you've been in policing a long time. Mm-hmm. Is Guelph not that small town anymore? Or like, I guess, where does people's perception differ from the realities of policing now?
Well, I think, so I believe our own kind of city stats project us to be 169,000, 170,000 in the next 10 years or so. If you add that to the 20,000 or more at the university, that brings us close to 190,000 people.
Right.
But then if you also look at, for example, like in the last 5 years, 8.4% growth, that's a lot of growth. Mm-hmm. As we're very close to the GTA. So I think, well, we've always been a little bit, we've thought of ourselves, I think, as not being part of the GTA.
Right.
You know, without traffic, we're an hour to downtown. Mm. So as the community grows, as kind of the GTA grows, we're impacted by all those dynamics.
I guess that part of what I'm getting at is there is a struggle between sort of two sections of town right now. There's the ones who have been the victims of maybe property crime, or know somebody who's been the victim of property crime, see the rising crime rate, or maybe hyper aware because of their own personal experience. We still have the people, though, who maybe it's because of the geography of where they are in town, or you know, their disposition. They don't see the rising crime rate. Guelph still feels like the small town that they know, or the low crime place that they know. And so I guess, you know, how do we reconcile that? How do you convince the people? Or maybe how do both sides of this meet? Because I feel like there is that divide, that people who are, you know, and again, maybe it depends on where they live in town.
Well, I think for us, first and foremost, as a police service, we need to recognize that we exist to serve the public and earn their trust in everything we do. So that's why things like council and the conversation we're having right now is so important, to be able to have that transparency and kind of have this conversation. How do we have to do our best to represent the needs of the entire community, being mindful of there will be kind of dynamics that maybe are slightly different between communities or areas of our community. But for us, it's kind of like the wellness of the entire community is our goal.
I also want to talk about the wellness of your officers, because that's a big piece of this. I was at the Ward 2 Town Hall on Saturday, and I'm sure you've heard this attitude quite a bit, you yourself having been an advocate for mental health too, that why don't they just suck it up? That the idea that everybody has stress, or that, you know, police officers have always encountered stress, that, you know, what's going on in policing now? And I wonder if maybe this is part of it too, is has the job changed? And how much has the job changed versus how it was maybe 20, 30 years ago?
So we could talk for hours about this one. First and foremost, I think it's important to realize that when people think of the police,
right,
the police are not an abstract concept. Mm-hmm. The police are, in fact, the men and women, civilian and sworn, who help entire communities navigate life's most difficult moments. Mm-hmm. So if you can think of kind of like our members literally investigate, you know, very difficult offenses. They'll go to a tragic car accident, mm-hmm. investigate that car accident, and then they'll go from that car accident and to a home and tell parents that a son or daughter may not be coming home.
Right.
So if you can imagine what that's like to do that day in and day out, I think in policing we've come a very long way, because now we're recognizing
right.
not only the individual impacts, but the cumulative impacts of those experiences take a toll.
Right.
So I think that it's difficult, and I think it's not, if we take a seek to understand perspective,
right.
I think it's difficult for members of the community to realize truly what it's like to deal with kind of trauma every single day.
Right.
And fortunately, they don't have to.
Yeah.
So the fact that we're having this conversation is light years ahead of where we were 25 or 30 years ago.
Right.
I think also our work has changed in the sense that there's those in our community who struggle with mental health. Or those in our community who struggle with, like, the opiate addiction crisis. These are not unique to us. These are societal things that are happening in communities all over Canada, all over North America, excuse me. But when situations arise where, say, for example, when a crisis happens, if the appropriate medical resources aren't available, our members are the ones who are there to help.
Right.
So it's the work has changed, the work has increased, and that takes a toll on our members.
And you have to take the call.
Yes.
Yeah.
We don't, and I mentioned this at council, the vast majority of the services we provide, they're not discretionary.
Right.
Like, we are the people who 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, our members respond to emergencies in the community.
So it does sound like a piece of this is, because, you know, there were car accidents, you know, 40 years ago that police officers would have to respond to, but, you know, it is a matter of sort of being more aware now of
yeah.
what that impact is, and that an officer who may have been dealing with that on a daily basis and just, you know, quote unquote, dealt with it without really necessarily dealing with it, that we sort of understand better now what that impact is. And this is actually a step forward as opposed to.
Yeah, and I think both for first responders, but also for everyone, like, you know, having a more sophisticated and informed understanding of mental health and wellness, and realizing that stress affects everybody, not just first responders.
Yeah.
But as we have these conversations, it's once we acknowledge it, it's kind of making steps both at a community health level, but for first responders, to give them the resources and services they need, so that ultimately we as a service can sustain our ability to provide service to our whole community.
Right. For a Guelph police officer now, is there a sort of typical day, or is it when they get in the patrol car and they start the shift, they have no idea where the day will take them?
So I think in general, a day is always quite varied.
Mm-hmm.
But if there is a typical aspect to their day, is their days are extraordinarily busy.
Yeah.
So they come to work with calls waiting for them. They spend their days responding, going from call to call. Many of our members, it's in their nature to want to provide service.
Yeah.
So it's very common that people say, for example, we'll miss lunch breaks and things like that, so that they can get to the call to serve the person who needs their help.
Right. I'm wondering too, and you know, law and order, crime, one of these things. It's one of these conversations that's driven by anecdotally. Did you read this? Did you hear
mm-hmm.
that? we know that from the stats, Guelph is less safe than it was in the last several years. But, I mean, in talking about people's perceptions, you know, people watch the news, people hear the news, people hear about people getting shot in the leg or someone being stopped carrying a machete downtown. How do you, I guess, as the chief, how can you sort of reconcile people that it isn't getting crazier out there? We're experiencing sort of, as we were talking about, the changes of going from a small city to a bigger city. But Guelph is still relatively a safe place, you can say that.
Yes, I think I can absolutely say that. Having said that, though,
yeah.
I think we need to be, we can't ignore the trends.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't ignore the fact that, you know, 10 years ago in 2007 and 2011, we were rated as the safest community for our size.
Mm-hmm.
We're now, I think, 16 of 34 is where we're. So the trends as far as call volumes, crime severity, in order to make sure that we don't become complacent, I think we have to make sure we're mindful of the trends. Like I said at council, our goal is that we're the safest, happiest, healthy community in the country.
Mm-hmm.
I can't guarantee that's going to happen,
right.
But I think that's a sound goal for us as a community to strive for.
It's a beautiful promise, isn't it?
It's not a promise, it's a goal.
It's a goal, but, you know, it's something that, you know, you can't necessarily, you know, no matter how many police officers there are, you know, how many resources, like suppose council says, like, Chief Kobe, here's a blank check, do with it what you will. At the end of the day, there are no guarantees.
Well, and it's not just about policing,
yeah.
Right? Like as far as there are so many community leaders and different people that this isn't a policing thing.
Yeah.
It's about a community wellness and well-being thing.
Right.
So that includes many other services, many other like healthcare providers, community interactions and things like that. So it's certainly not a policing thing.
Right.
But we have a fairly significant role to play in the safety of the community.
Right. And I'm guilty of this too, because I used to work in the hotel business overnight on the weekend, so
mm-hmm.
there would be some, let's say, characters. But of course, the first call when there's trouble is to the police. And it's not a situation where you see a couple of people maybe fighting or yelling at each other and say, like, hey, I'm, like, you want me to get a mental health expert on the phone or something like that? At, you know, at the end of the day, the first call goes to the police, whatever the situation is.
Yep.
And that's something that is, first of all, it's always going to be the case, but second of all, there is that unknown factor, because you know, as much information as a dispatcher tries to get,
yeah.
you don't know what you're going to happen when you get to the address.
Yeah. The unknown is always present,
yeah.
right? So our members don't know if they're going to a medical call, if they're going to a car accident, if they're going to investigate, like, a violent offense.
Right.
It's that, but the fact that they're always there to answer the call is why, as far as the appropriate resourcing and supports
mm-hmm.
are important, again, to sustain our ability to serve the whole community is what it's about.
But I guess, is there a level of training where a police officer can be that jack of all trades? Or are we having to maybe start thinking about policing in a different way? In that, you know, for 2019, 2020, the 9.8% helps the police service, you know, not have so many officers working so much overtime. But in the terms of the long-term picture, are we trying to maybe attach too many tools to a police officer that, you know, maybe they don't have the power to run? Not, no disrespect yeah. to any of the officers, of course, but, I mean, we're expecting a lot of them now.
So our police will never be masters of all trades.
Right.
Never. And we have changed how we do business. For example, we now have, like, mental health workers embedded in our service who come on calls, and there's a great interaction there. So that's definitely changing things.
Mm-hmm.
I think overall it's how our members can help working together with many other people in the community to solve community issues or address community priorities. That's not always going to be arresting people or charging
right.
people. It's solving issues that affect the community to make the community healthier,
mm-hmm.
And also understanding that while we have a role to play in various aspects of things, we can't, like, we don't own it all as a policing issue. We can't be, the opiate addictions crisis is not by its nature a policing issue.
Right.
It's a health issue that can have policing aspects to it.
Just as you were talking there, it made me think of, and I'm sure you've seen the comments too on the Facebook page about Guelph bike thefts and other places. People are frustrated because the police aren't throwing away the key, as it were, that, you know, that maybe there is, shall we say, a bit more flexibility in terms of, you know, it's not just a matter of putting somebody in prison. And I think that's part of the maybe difficulty of this too, and maybe some of where the cynicism in the community is coming from, that they feel like the crimes aren't being prosecuted or that the offenders aren't being locked away.
Well, and again, then we navigate towards a police role and the role of the justice system, right? So, for example, like, our job is to provide the court with timely, accurate, charter-compliant data.
Right.
The court makes decisions with respect to conviction, sentencing, etc. So that's not necessarily
right.
A policing issue, right?
Right. It just makes me think too. There's been a lot of, you know, discussion in you know, the recent months about property crimes and, you know, thefts in cars being increasing. It made me think of the old broken windows theory of policing, and if the of course, you know that the basis of that theory was you work on the small crimes, the broken windows, the rest kind of takes care of itself. I mean, the men who sort of came up with that theory have discounted a bit of it themselves, but is there maybe a bit of truth of that here in Guelph? Are we having a broken windows problem?
Well, we definitely, so there is no doubt that our crime severity index is, that number has increased steadily over the last several years. That number is kind of broken down into a violent crime severity index number and a non-violent. Our non-violent crime severity index, which measures kind of the exact things you're talking about,
right,
that has increased at a very significant rate and greater than the average in the province.
Right.
So we definitely have a lot of situations where, whether it be thefts from cars and driveways, sheds, bicycles, all of that stuff, they have been on a very significant incline over the last several years, and that's a very common theme that we hear from the community. They're really, really tired of that, and so it's certainly, if it's important to the community, it's important to us.
Right.
Then we circle back to the resourcing issue,
right,
with respect to kind of the. We have to do, like, if there's a life-threatening emergency, you know what I mean? And that's,
yeah,
but they are very important crimes, and that's a very, like, we hear that time and time again, how frustrated the community is with that.
Yeah. What do you think about the current levels of sort of visibility? And I've heard this come up too, that people talking about community officers and just seeing an officer walk around, and in terms of the impact of that, I take it you would probably make the argument that the police doesn't really have the resources right now to do that kind of police. I mean, that's what I've gathered, but yeah, you can correct me.
I would say you're correct, but I would also say I completely agree in how valuable just being present and being visible in the community is. Mark O'Connell,
yep,
is our new downtown officer, and Mark, in just the few months he's been downtown, has demonstrated perfectly how impactful and effective just having police officers who are in the community and not necessarily there to attend a call, but to be visible, to say hello, to interact, to engage. I think it's difficult to overstate the value of us just having people available to be present in the community. Same as proactive traffic enforcement.
Right.
I have learned that nobody likes getting speeding tickets, but everyone wants safe roads.
Yeah.
So those are all the types of things that we would like to achieve.
Right.
But again, it's a function of resourcing for us.
Right. You get a lot of the credit and a lot of the blame as the chief, the job you signed up for. we've talked a lot about the responsibility of policing here, but I'm wondering from your point of view, what's the responsibility of community? How can the community help make a safer community in your experience?
First and foremost, the police are the community and vice versa. I think there was a brilliant gentleman named Sir Robert Peel many, many years ago who talked about community policing and Peel's principles of policing. And that was one of the key components, was things like the police are essentially members of the community, and the community has a role to play in policing. So what we want to know, like if someone breaks into your car in your driveway, if no one tells us, we don't know about it.
Right.
So if the community can tell us about things that are happening that concern them, at least then we can start to understand what the issues are. But again, this, you and I connecting, things like that, the more we can engage and learn from the community, I think the better service we can provide.
It's not an episode of Law and Order either. It's not done in an hour.
It is not done in an hour, no.
I think that that's how we sort of view the job too, is through the lens of of TV.
And police are human beings.
Sure.
They're men and women who come to work, and they give so much to literally help people, like I said before, navigate life's most difficult moments.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk about your work so far. You come from the RCMP, you've lived in Guelph for years. In terms of coming to the Guelph Police Force and making that transition, has the job so far been what you thought it would be? Like, has it met your expectations in terms of the demands and the...
It has. I think that it... I can say without a doubt, it's the best job I've ever had. I feel incredibly privileged to have this job. Despite the fact that we've lived here for almost 20 years, only now, it's in this role, do I have the privilege of learning all the things going on in the community, all the unbelievable community leaders, volunteers, programs. Mm-hmm. I said at council the other night, in the time I've lived here, I have certainly realized that we live in a world-class community. And in the 9 months since I've been in this role, having worked many, many places, we have world-class men and women in our police service. It is easily the best job I've ever had. I really enjoy it.
I hope Mr. Drone was listening. Maybe to wrap up. Oh, look, the generators. So maybe to wrap up, looking ahead to the next couple of years, what do you think, in terms of the improved policing that this ask will yield, what do you think, not to hold you to anything, but, what do you think this will look like? What's the goals for the next few years coming from this?
So like I said, the goal is for our community to be the safest, happiest community possible. I can't guarantee we'll be number one every year.
Right.
That's the goal. How do we get there? I think some of the themes that we've talked a lot about internally, we exist to serve the public and earn their trust. Strive for excellence, and we should ensure a culture of leadership within the organization and within the community. And in addition to those three things, two really, really important things that will make that possible is the wellness of our people and our community, and also I can't overstate the importance of diversity and inclusion.
Mm-hmm.
So we learn from each other, we understand from each other. Not only do we represent our community, but we understand, so represent kind of their needs and understand what they need. But if we don't embrace diversity and inclusion in everything we do, then I don't think that we'll be able to meet those goals.
Chief Kobe, thank you for your time.
Thanks so much.
And that was Chief Gordon Kobe of the Guelph Police Service, and I thank him for taking some time this week to talk to our show, and we will see how this all turns out on Tuesday. Tuesday at 2 p.m. is when the council meeting begins, and the 2020 budget will be decided. So stay tuned for that. And stay tuned for another episode of our show coming up next week. And that is it for this week's show. You can go to our website, opensourcesguelph.com. Find us on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire or on Twitter at @OS_Guelph. If you'd like to listen to the show again, you can download it from our website every Monday or go to the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean. Or you can subscribe through your favorite podcast app at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson. Or you can check out my politics site at GuelphPolitico.ca. Scotty Hertz can be found at Scotty Hertz on Facebook and Twitter. And also he blogs at spannerbook.wordpress.com. And DJ Sounds Good to Me will be playing tunes that sound good to her at the top of the hour here on CFRU. 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And Scotty will return from away next week for another episode of Open Sources. And we'll see you then.